Hey there, welcome to another episode of the Dead Frog Podcast. I am one of your hosts, Joe Felix, and with me today is the amazing Allison Kloster.
Oh, I just talked over you. Hi, I'm the amazing Allison Kloster.
Let's do that again.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Is the interrupting Allison Kloster.
Sorry, I won't say it. All right.
Today we'll be talking about Joan Rivers. We're real excited to be listening to her 1967 Ed Sullivan Show appearance. Here to fill you more on the late, great Joan. Allie, take it away.
Okay, all right, buckle in, y'all. We're going to talk about Joan Malinsky, who actually is, dun-dun-dun, Joan Rivers. She ended up changing her name back after she graduated from college. She was born Joan Malinsky, 1933. She lived in Brooklyn, which many of us probably are not surprised by her New York heritage. She moved to Larchmont, which is north of New York City. She moved there around her teenage years. And while she was a teenager, she said that she was overweight. She kind of felt awkward. And a lot of that stuff influenced a lot of... After she lost the weight as a young adult, I believe. And so that definitely shaped a ton of her worldview, she said. She was a theater kid. And she ended up going to college. And one funny thing I found out, I want to look into this more, but she went to Barnard College and she frequently would say, and it was actually reported on at that time, that she graduated as a summa cum laude, or I don't know which one that is, if that's like your first class.
Yeah.
But apparently her biographer found out that she that was not true and she made up a few things. Which is kind of funny and like, it's one of those things that depending on when the biography came out, if I read it in like the 90s or early 2000s, I would have been like, wow, Joan Rivers, how dare you lie about that? But today I'm like, hell yeah, I get it. Like you had a lot stacked against you. I totally understand her being like, yes. Oh, another thing she lied about was that she said that she performed in a play with Barbara Streisand. She did not.
Oh, okay.
early on in her career, she actually ended up knowing Barbara later on, but not at that time. Anyway, I thought that was funny. So after college, she ended up performing stand-up throughout Greenwich Village. She worked. She was in a comedy troupe called Jim, Jake, and Joan. And after that was around that time is when in 1965 is when she got her first stint on The Tonight Show. But this was The Tonight Show before Johnny Carson, so she was with Jack Parr. And then when Johnny Carson took over, she had to audition 7 times before she ended up getting the gig. And after she got it, she just, I mean, we'll be talking about that today with this set that we're going to, you know, discuss. But she was a favorite. And she even joked about being like his daughter or something. Yeah, she ended up, it wasn't until 1983, but in 1983, Carson established Joan as his first permanent guest host on The Tonight Show. So she was a big deal. That was a big deal. And they really liked their pairing together because he was this Midwestern, like kind of like guy. And she was this edgy, you know, as they called her, ethnic, which is funny that being Jewish was ethnic back then. So then... she wrote movies in the 70s. I actually want to watch this movie with Stockard Channing that she wrote and made for TV. It's based on Joan's life. She was in Hollywood Square. She did a lot of TV acting. She released a lot of comedy albums. And another thing I forgot to mention is that she, I'm sure people know this, but a lot of Joan was, she essentially is the main influence for the Marvelous Miss Maisel character. And I didn't realize I didn't realize how eerily accurate, like literally so many things. Like the biggest one is that Joan and the character in the show, her influence, her main comic legend, her main influence was Lenny Bruce. And Lenny Bruce is actually a character in Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. And I'm zooming ahead in her bio, but in 1994, Joan wrote and starred in a play on Broadway that was about Lenny Bruce's mother. Lenny Bruce's mother was a stand-up comedian. And Lenny Bruce's mom influenced Lenny Bruce, and then Lenny Bruce influenced Joan, and then Joan made a play about Lenny Bruce. Anyway, I thought that was kind of crazy. Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and so I know this is a long bio, but I just was like, damn, I've heard her. She's so funny. And as a kid, like, not growing up absorbing comedy, like, I knew her mainly from when she and her daughter hosted the red carpet shows before the Oscars and the Globes, which was a big deal because she and her daughter, working for E! Television, they revolutionized the red carpet industry. So that fashion designers, when you think of like fashion designers on like the red carpet, that's because of Joan Rivers. It's just, she influenced so much. I also forgot to mention that her breakthrough in comedy was at the Second City in Chicago in 1961. And she credits that with starting her career in earnest. So another amazing thing about her career is that she became the first female host of a late night talk show, which was incredible. It was in, I think, 1986 when that happened. It was called The Late Show starring Joan Rivers. It only lasted a year, though, and this is where her story gets a little bit sad. Temporarily, though, I mean, it's always sad, but she bounced back. So one of the reason why it only lasted a year is because the network told Joan that they were going to can her husband, who was a producer on the show. She said, no, you're not doing that. And they said, yeah, we are. And they ended up totally canceling the show. And about a year later, her husband committed suicide. And that is insane. And obviously, yeah, it's really, really sad. I mean, obviously he had mental health problems, but like I can't even imagine just the amount of like stress and that job and that or everything must have been that he must have had.
To like have been your wife, your partner, to have been the first female late night host, and then you feel guilty that it stopped being the case because of you.
That's a really good point. Yes, especially since their relationship, I don't remember, I didn't look into how they met, but just seeing the years of when they got married, that aligns with when her career took off. So he has been with her since the beginning. And I can totally, that you're right. That's a really good point. I didn't think of that. That sucks. And then I'm sure she probably felt guilty because he felt guilty. And she ended up saying years later that she came extremely close to killing herself. And she even got a gun. But apparently her Yorkie, her dog, hopped into her lap right as she was like, I don't know if it was the moment she was going to do it, or at least like, you know, the when she was about to decide to do it. He hopped in her lap, and she said that her Yorkie saved her life in that moment, which is just crazy. She also said that she developed bulimia after he died. It's like all of these, and her career kind of just didn't do that. It was amazing. Like on paper, all the things that she continued to do are like incredible. She ended up getting a daytime talk show in 1989, and the reviews were great. People would say that she was, you know, this was awesome for her style of comedy, like kind of like the stream of consciousness really was good for that, but still, it stinks. And yeah, I mean, she's written 12 books. I still have to check out her 2010 document, the 2010 documentary called Joan Rivers, A Piece of Work, which was about her life, and I know it got excellent reviews. So yeah, this has really been making me want to go kind of dig into her, all the different types of her work. So she's a legend, that is for sure.
And with that extraordinary research, Allie, we are going to actually listen to a very short set by her, which you mentioned, sounds like a regular set.
Yeah.
A regular length one. So please stick around. You'll hear a word from our sponsor and the set itself. We'll be right back.
I'll tell you something. The way the styles are today, I'm glad I'm married, because if I was single, I could never get married looking like this, you know? I feel sorry for any single girl today. The styles and the whole society is not for single girls, you know that. Single men, yes. A man, he's single, he's so lucky. A boy on a date, all he has to be is clean and able to pick up the check. He's a winner. You know that. Or a man can call up anybody in the whole world. You know that? Hello, I saw your name in the locker room. I thought I'd give you a quick call. A girl can't call. Girl, you have to wait for the phone to ring, right? And when you finally go on the date, the girl has to be well-dressed. The face has to look nice. The hair has to be in shape. The girl has to be the one that's bright and pretty, intelligent, a good sport. Howard Johnson's again, hooray, hooray. Excuse me. A girl, you're 30 years old, you're not married, you're an old maid. A man, he's 90 years old, he's not married, he's a catch. It's a whole different thing. Isn't that so? Yes, yes. It kills me. You have an extra man, bring him along. He's 98. Bring him. He's dead. Bring him. We'll prop him. Just bring him. We'll say he's quiet. I know what I'm speaking about, because my mother had two of us at home that weren't, as the expression goes, moving. And I... Don't ask. I'm from a little town called Larchmont, where if you're not married, if you're a girl, and you're over 21, you're better off dead. It's that simple, you know? And I was the last girl in Larchmont. Do you know how that feels? Sitting around my mother's house, 21, 22, 24, having a good time, living, eating candy bars, enjoying myself, but single. And the neighbors would come over and they'd say to my mother, how's Joan? Still not married? And my mother would say, if she were alive. You know how that hurts? When you're sitting right there? When I was 21, my mother said, only a doctor for you. When I was 22, she said, all right, a lawyer, CPA. 24, she said, we'll grab a dentist. 26, she said, anything. If he could make it to the door, he was mine, you know? What do you mean you don't like him? He's intelligent, he found the bell himself. What do you want? Anybody that came to my house was it. Oh, Joan, there's the most attractive young man down here with a mask and a gun. Anything I show him.
And we're back.
That was a good one.
I'd normally say short and sweet, but I don't think there's anything sweet about that.
Yeah, I mean, she's not sweet. She's a killer.
Yeah, quick and to the point.
She's so good.
I had just finished watching the whole entirety of the Mad Men season.
Mm.
So... this, you know, I think that show takes place in the 60s. This set was in 67. So it's it's a product of its time. I feel like I have a proper context for like what's challenging of the status quo this set really is.
Yeah. I having watched The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, that also I feel help put me into the mindset of this as well. I mean, that's the beauty of this age of golden TV. We're able to really empathize with it more. And there were moments during the set, not many moments because I was so in it that I didn't come out to like, it's more so me, Allie, as I'm like thinking about the set as I'm watching it in terms of like this podcast, but there were moments when I was watching it and I was like, yeah, I mean, I'm listening to the audience laughing and I'm thinking, wow, like it's almost like it's even the laughs sound like they're from the 60s, and like it's just crazy. but yeah, I mean, at least her opening, I mean, oh gosh, I think that even the way, okay, I wonder if you were to plop Joan Rivers and put her right now in 2020. Mm-hmm. I think that every one of these jokes stands up and holds well. But the way at the beginning she takes care of the audience is something I think she wouldn't have to do in 2020.
Oh, do you mean like the saying that she wouldn't like fit in the way that she looks?
That's one example, yes. And we'll, and another example is when she keeps talking about how lucky guys are, how lucky guys are. The way that she, her framing device is of how she frames the top is literally genius, because she's able to frame it in terms of like just pure comedy structure, intelligence, like writing. Like she has the writing framing that works because she's packing it up, packing it all up top. But also what she's framing is the audience expectation, where she's like, here, I'm self-deprecating, I'm making fun of myself, and I'm saying that guys are like this, and I'm about to rip on guys for the next 2 minutes and 43 seconds. But don't worry, it's because you guys are lucky. Nothing here I'm saying is going to feel responsible for any of this. It's all because you're lucky. So she, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Like it can, like there, I think, I mean, I don't think she's directly saying that they're actually lucky. I think if
right.
if you're not, if you're not reading into it as a dude, you're probably incredibly privileged. If you're not, yeah, if you are reading into it, into what she's saying, then I think it's even more piercing.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yes, exactly. I mean, I don't think that it's very clear that she does not think that they're lucky, and I'm sure she would have a lot to say about it. But I just really think that I'm able to understand the how, like how did Joan Rivers, how is she the one who became, was such a pioneer for female comics? And I think that is, I mean, we could talk about that when we can, like, and, you know, I think that the fact that she's pretty and feminine, but also, you know, because she is, you know, as they called her, ethnic back then, you know, she's a little bit, she's yeah. not, you know, like that makes her a little bit different enough for people, even though she's feminine, she can be a little bit not as, it's like she doesn't have to be like as objectified in a way. So she's like feminine, but she's not too, she's pretty, but not too pretty. Like all these things, like I can see viewing it, how she was successful, but, and then also, the way that she is basically telling the audience, I'm about to make fun of you, but also don't worry, you're not going to feel uncomfortable about it. Like that's mm-hmm. kind of what I didn't, what I'm noticing. That's what sticks out to me the most about her setup.
Yeah. I think largely how she delivers the jokes is because she doesn't really rest any of her jokes. She doesn't give them time to even be like have their sensibilities offended.
Right.
They she keeps going. She's moving like the pace. You're more like, let me hop on board rather than yeah. Like you only have the prima facie like the first reaction, right? Which is let me laugh. You don't have time to think about it further. Maybe you can think about it further at home. But like, if you're in the audience there, you're gonna keep laughing, and not really consider that this broad is trying to stir up some trouble.
That's an interesting point, and I would like. I don't know much about male comics during this period and their style, but you know, I just from what I'm gathering, it's more like I'm picturing them like walking around the stage. Kind of with like a little shoulder slump, and they got the microphone, you know, and then they like look up at the audience and they go back and they kind of pace. I feel like they have more, there's more of a casualness that they can have. And with her, I think that's interesting because I'm wondering if she has to keep that pace going so she doesn't lose people. She can't afford the precious moments that other comics might be able to have. Like I'm trying to think of the term, like, she's got a smaller grace period, or I don't know if that's the, you know, she has.
You're right. She has to keep moving. Like it's almost like she has a chip on her shoulder, and because she's a woman, she can't be seen as someone who shells out wisdom or insight. Mm-hmm. She's more someone who just points out contradictions or inconsistencies.
Oh, I think I know what you're saying. Yeah, I get that. Yeah,
double standards.
Yes, she can point those out, and when she does it though, she has to always relate it back to herself. It's very first person storytelling. It's not mm-hmm. as much like an observational, like she's observational but through the lens of her own experience, which again is most is a significant portion of stand-up comedians. That's nothing like super special, but you know, I do definitely, I think that there is something there where it's like, oh, we'll hear you. I don't want to hear you going off about, you know, this critique of society. I just wanted you to talk to me about how you look and about your mom and trying to get you married. It's funny as hell, so yeah. Though. But yeah, let's get, yeah.
Yeah, so you pretty much set it up with, yeah, she couldn't get married looking like this. She does that whole thing where she introduces the topic well. She's going to talk about dating, getting married, and that sort of aspect of life. And she talks about how, like, now, like, she's glad that she's married because now, like, society isn't for girls. Now she's positing herself as someone who's not subject to these things, more so an observer.
Yes.
Now she's kind of writing the line between talking about herself and talking about society.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
I love that. She talks about how men are lucky and, like, all they have to do is be clean and be able to pick the check. Which I was thinking about that, and I was like, oh, like, I can do neither of those things right now. Like, that's literally, I'm known to be the opposite of that. Right? So I'm like, damn.
You dine and dash, and you're dirty when you do it.
Yeah, there we go. All that, all sorts of alliteration. yeah, and like, what is it, like, how men have, like, she points out this double standard where men can just do any sort of thing to court a woman. Even like, I heard your name, I saw your name in the locker room, and I thought I'd give you a call.
My gosh.
And it's like, yeah. Incredibly startling. If like nowadays, even like in the 80s, right? If you heard some guy fucking say that to you, like I was looking through my friend Johnny's Rolodex and I came across your name and I thought maybe this broad, I wonder what the gams look like on her. So then I took the number, right, without his knowing, and I decided to give you a call.
Yeah, I mean, my friend, she was driving home literally yesterday, and she posted on her Instagram stories, and there was a guy behind her. No, so there was a guy in front of her who was blowing kisses at her, and then he stopped traffic. And everyone was honking at her to move around. And she's like, I don't want to go in front of him because that's what he wants. But it got so bad that she had to go in front. And the guy followed her home. She eventually, like, drove away and she eventually lost him. That's just an average day. And it's just crazy to me that that kind of guy would be the type of guy who would be in a locker room and find her. Also, what does that mean? Also, like, was the implication there that in the locker room that someone wrote like, oh, Sally is easy.
Yeah, for a good time call.
Yeah, that kind of thing.
I mean, something like that, yeah.
Because that got the biggest laugh up top. That was first huge laugh.
Yeah, I think it's really cool because it's probably one of the first times that that thing that we see privately in bathrooms gets spoken of on television or like at all. It's such a public place. So it's good for her. Like, she capitalized on that, like, well.
That's true.
Yeah, she talks about, like, how girls have to be sort of submissive and waiting for a man to take action, to be, you know, the aggressor. A girl can't call. She has to be well-dressed up. She has to have her hair all nice. She has to be bright, pretty, and a good sport.
Oh, and the Howard Johnsons.
Yeah, that's a good act, though.
That
Howard
was
Johnson's again. Very good. Hooray! Yeah, yeah.
Yes, that was one of her. Was that one of her first act outs? I think that was one of the most.
Well, she does the phone call first, where she's pretending to be the guy who's calling up the gal.
You're right.
But yeah, she's like, it's good because here's an interesting thing. She has a high energy and a high speaking pace throughout the whole thing, and one way she can disrupt that pace is through her act outs. They're still high energy, but it's just the pacing that's different. That's when she slows down a bit when she doesn't act out, and then that's when you know she's doing it. Like, because, you know, back in that time, right, even today, if you're doing an act out on stage, sometimes people don't understand what's happening. They're just like, what's this? So even then, she was clear enough with her act out.
Yeah, that's I'm right now. I'm literally on silent watching her acting out, and it's funny because when I think of Joan Rivers, I think of her voice. And I think, and I also grew up with her when she was older, so she wasn't as physical, etc. So seeing all this is just really interesting. All of her movements are like shoulders and arms and face, shoulder, arm, face, shoulder, arm, face. And it's like she's like this wound up little toy. She has all this energy, and it almost feels like she wants to release more of it. Not necessarily as a performer, because performer Joan, it's everything is like a tightly, everything is controlled. But right now, oh, there's that bit. She looks like Frankenstein. What was she? Oh, that was the old man bit, which we're going to get to when she's being a 98-year-old man. Like, so what I'm trying to say is I think that I wonder if, I mean, this is a girl who literally, this is a woman. She grew up in a very traditional experience, and the women had to do this, that, and the other. She looks like she has a lot of physical energy. And I wonder if she was born now, once again, if she would be even more of a physical comedian. Like, even because she just has this very, like, I don't know how tall she was, but she just seems like a spark plug. Like, she's just got this giant, like, this very, like, it's like wanting to burst out of her, but she has to channel it all through this 1960s woman aesthetic.
Yeah. Are you saying like her energy exceeds her corporal body?
Exactly. Thank you. You summarized that whole thing. That's what I was trying to say.
Yeah. That could be a really good place to be in.
She's 5'2". She was 5'2". Yeah. Yeah.
I like how she continues on to, by the way, I only knew the Howard Johnson's reference because of watching Mad Men. and there was a whole fun episode where something happens. Yeah, it's like creates another juxtaposition between, or comparison between, girls who are 30 years old and they're called old maids, and guys who are like 90 years old called a catch. Oh wait, who are single? All right, both of these being single. And it's like a very quick and easy joke, but it's like an observation that needs to be made, and a lot of comedy. Hint, hint. You can get a lot of credit for coming up with a joke just to be the first person to even remark on it. It doesn't even have to be the best setup in the world. The fact that people realize what you're saying, it really does a lot of the work.
Are you saying that she's like the originator of this? I would say that observation, I feel like I'm watching my aunts and my mom would say that joke. But when I watched Joan Rivers say it here, me watching this for the first time, it occurred to me, I'm like, damn, she's probably the first person who said it. We probably all say this stuff and say these jokes because Joan Rivers said it first. Is that kind of what you're saying?
No. What I'm saying is you can be successful by observing things and point, like, first, right? You can gather a lot of material by just being the first, like, person in whatever is zeitgeist to mention the thing. You can just be a comic who just literally does that.
Right.
Like right, yeah. Now, right? I can go up on stage and be like, hey, you know, I was talking to my artificial intelligence, and I gotta say, she's quite a nag. Right? And it's like, we're on the frontier of artificial intelligence. It's like, oh, I was trying to upload my consciousness onto my iPhone the other day, but then I realized I didn't have enough gigs, you know?
Okay, I mean, that's a beautiful joke. You need to run with that one right now. Oh, shoot. What? 1 second.
Yeah. Ah. Allie's laptop died. So we have to start recording again.
Well, technically it was my headphones, my wireless headphones that died and then disconnected me from the laptop. I don't know why Anchor automatically shuts you out just because your headphones turned off. That doesn't make any sense. Anchor.
This is our sponsor.
Oh, Anchor, you're the best. I love you, Anchor. I just like to say that in this tone. That's how I express love.
Well, they don't listen to us anyway, so.
Okay. Screw
them. Yeah, so.
I love them.
Let's just move on to the.
Yeah, let's move on.
Talking about her sisters at home, right? Like, once you're like, yeah, just being a certain age makes you seem like you're not going to, like, your future is ended for you. So if you're not quartered by that time as a woman.
Yes, that was crazy. Before we get into that, The only time I got thrown in the entire set, which I don't know if it was just me, but it was her segue line transitioning into that section when she said, my mother had two of us who weren't, as they say, moving. And I after I listened to it, I think she meant moving in relation to, like, moving out of the house. But it kind of, I didn't know if I was hearing, like, something of the times. And so I don't know. Did you have a hiccup there, or was that just my brain?
No, I thought that's one of the first times she does, like, a very straightforward joke. Like, it's just like a, like an aside kind of joke, but I liked it. It was kind of like, I felt her confidence, and I kind of trusted her more because of it.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm sorry to admit that. After all, she is a dame.
A dame? She's a dame?
Is that the term?
I don't know if she's a dame. Maybe she's a dame. I mean, she probably is a dame. Oh, wait. You mean an actual, like, British dame? Because I found out that...
No, like, just like the way that it became colloquially used to refer to a woman.
Oh, see? I feel like I need to transport back to the 60s and get a lesson, because I things are flying over my head. Well, you are... I think that is a term... But in addition to that, the reason why I thought that you really meant she was a dame is because she was, no joke, one of four Americans to be invited to Prince Charles's wedding, which I thought was really freaking random. And one of her best friends was Nancy Reagan.
Wow.
So randomness. Anyway.
I like the idea of, like, someone, one of our listeners being like Illuminati confirmed.
Honestly, I think this would be a plot point in, like, a random movie where, wow, we just revealed her Illuminati. We were the unraveling of the Illuminati came from an obscure podcast.
Yeah.
The comedy podcast. I love it.
We don't have to be obscure with your support.
That's true, y'all.
You can give to our Patreon.
Yes. Yes.
We have different tiers of contribution.
Mm-hmm.
So if you start at $5 a month, we will give you a thank you note. But if you go to our next tier, which is $50 a month, we will mention your name in the show. And if you go to our next tier, which is $500 a month, we will personally invite you to come on and do 1 minute of analysis.
Yes. Yep. And time will be up after that minute.
Okay. Yes. Yeah. I like the joke.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, after I rewatched it, I was like, I like the joke, but I just checked for a second. Okay. Yeah. And so then she's talking about, yes, going back to the, you know, if you're over 21, you're better off dead. Yeah. Also during this bit, I really got the sense of storytelling from her when she called herself the last girl in Larchmont. That's just such a writer's brain, screenwriter's brain and everything.
Yeah, I agree. We find out later that, you know, she's a gifted writer.
So gifted. And then my favorite part of this whole last third of her set, I'd say that's was the line. It was a throwaway line, but so you got to laugh out of the audience. But when she said that she was living her best life, she was living, eating candy bars and enjoying herself. Just the idea of, like, a 21-year-old just, like, eating candy bars and just, like, it's just funny. It's just funny.
Yeah, I was like, yeah, it's a nightmare to think, like, that your family wants some, like, just some guy to start hobbling over, like, you know, gyrating on you and, like, procreating and locking you into this, like, long commitment.
Yes.
It's like, it's so violent, like, the shock, like, from having, like, no autonomy in high school. Then you have a little bit of freedom by being able to enjoy candy bars every day until you're, like, 20 or 21. And it's like, all right, that's enough of that. You're gonna pop out some babies.
Yeah, that's actually making me think now. Everything is so written. It was very calculated. I know she didn't throw it in there, but it's totally not a throwaway line, actually, now that I think about it. I mean, even going back to how she said that at that time she was more overweight, this is not just this is probably a little bit of self-deprecation, and this is her shame too, and where she's like, I was fine with it. I was eating candy bars. It seems like I was fine with who I was, but the rest of the world was literally wanting me to get married and all of this stuff. And it's really, that's really sad. It's really sad.
And it's like, she had to go from being overweight to like being
super thin.
Yeah, super thin, which probably was a result of like starving or methamphetamines. I'm serious. That's what it was common just to do, like amphetamines at the time.
Yeah.
To lose weight.
I mean, especially if that all lined up with her and, you know, New York City and all these things. Like when you go to the city, well, she was from the city, so that doesn't make any sense. But yeah. I mean, it's, you know, going back to how she was bulimic after her husband
Allie,
died.
You almost infantilized her.
How?
By you're about to paint her as like this woman who's like naive, like white-eyed girl going into the city, and then just boom, a jarring like a turn where she just turns to drugs.
Yeah, that's why I said that, because I was like, it sounds like you're right. I there's that temptation too, where it's like, you know, if she wasn't from Brooklyn, maybe I would have continued that sentence. Maybe I would have been like, oh, she, you know, so yeah, I mean, I think that infantilization in general was just something that she's constantly, I mean, you know, she had to deal with, and she wanted to eat candy, yet, and then here she is on stage with Johnny Carson. I mean, nothing about her is like, she's just very, very in your face, very direct, very nothing. She's, I really respect how she comes across, and she had to be very strong in here. You know, she's
a big, brazen, bold trendsetter.
Yeah.
All that good stuff.
Yeah. All that good stuff.
I do, this is a very simple joke, but it's very dope. About her mom referring to her as, you know, when her neighbor's like, hey, what about Joni? And it's like, you know, she was alive, you know, this and this and that, which is, it's, I don't think it's like a super good joke in modern times.
I agree.
But it's a joke that you tell amongst your friends when you're like, I kind of want to be cheeky today.
Yeah. Finish what you're saying. I'll say this in a second.
Oh no, go ahead. I was about to move on to the next joke.
Well, I was reading also when I was looking at her bio that another thing that she thinks that she started, like when she was talking in her stand-up style, that something that's unique to her is that she talked like kind of has a gossipy quality, and she said that's her own, that's what people have said about her, and she also embraces that as what made her different than a lot of people. And I that's a good thing and also a bad thing. The good thing is that, yeah, going back to what you said, she's the first person who did it. I think that's awesome. She's great at it. The flip side to that is, it kind of sucks that in order for people to listen to her, she probably knew that, you know, it's like a double-edged sword. It makes her more relatable and everything, but also it's like, it sucks that the woman has to be the gossipy one, that you have to talk with the girls. It's like, why can't she just say what she wants without it having to be in the, in that delivery, kind of something that's more familiar to how a woman is supposed to talk, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think that's also not to lessen like the misogyny that was on this woman. It's like, that's kind of what storytelling is.
True.
Right? Like it took me a while to realize this. Like, I hated stories because they padded morale with, or moralisms with like unnecessary information about like a guy who had blue eyes, when you can just say, you know, this guy was suffering from PTSD, right? There's like a whole movie. It's like, and then like the call to action is, you know, you might want to help or check in on your friends who have PTSD, right? But you get a whole movie about it, you know?
Yeah.
Where it's like, here in this act, you have to have a delivery system for these, I don't know, these truths about society.
Yeah. And so with that, in her bit right here, even though, as you were saying, it wasn't the strongest joke, but at least in our 2020 lens, but she just, her physicality, she used it. She delivered it. It was just when she played the neighbor and when she played her mom, I was laughing. That's what I remember more than the actual words themselves.
Yeah, totally. Can we move on? Can we do the heightening? That's almost like a lessening. That's really good.
Sure.
Where she talks about where, you know, when she was like 20, 21, her mom said, "You're gonna no one but a doctor."
Yes.
And when she was at 22, came about, and her mom was like, "You know, a lawyer, a CPA," and it's I think it's so fun. I don't know, just in my mind that her heightening is lessening.
Ah. Yeah, that math is so satisfying. I think because the heightening is lessening makes it even like makes it even funnier because these things complement each other. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And then and honestly, the you know where the actual again once again the punchline of anything, you know, anything like that in of itself, like the word anything is not funny. It's like whatever, but it's so satisfying. And the dentist one. Oh gosh, that was the funniest one. I don't know who first started ragging on dentists, but I hope it was Joan Rivers because that's funny.
Yeah, how they're not doctors.
Yes. Yes.
Nah, we love dentists here. Or not, whatever.
We love them. I actually need to go to the dentist, but anyway.
It's startling to hear her say, you know, but at 26, anything.
I know. 26.
I'm 28. I haven't had like a relationship that lasted more than a year.
At 26, I had never been in a relationship, period. That's when I met Leslie. It was like right around then. I had dated, never been in a relationship.
So damn.
That's just like, you know, it's crazy that is considered like, there's four steps. That's the fourth step. There's doctor, lawyer, dentist, and then anything. Then a random 98-year-old man who comes up and finds your doorbell.
Oh yeah. That was a good closing joke.
That was a very good one.
What do you mean you don't like him? Well, he's intelligent. He found the doorbell.
And then the last joke. See, yes, she did that heightening by de-heightening or but the overall thing, like, it was just so well orchestrated.
Wait, do the last joke.
Oh gosh, I'm gonna mess up the verbiage, but about honey, he's perfect for you. He's got a mask on and a gun, but he's okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good culminating joke. Joan Rivers kills it.
She does. Good for her. Go Joni. Yeah. I have a bunch of tabs open right now and I'm gonna deep dive into some Joan Rivers now.
I suggest you all do. Go check her out. She's got a large body of work.
Yes.
And, you know, shout out to a real one.
For real. R.I.P. Joan.
Do you have any final thoughts on it?
I would love to do, I feel like we could do more of her. She's just such an OG. And not just for females in comedy, but just comedy in general. It's timeless. Like, it's just... she's just a great. So I really seeing the volume of work across all the different media platforms, it's tremendous that she had this wonderful long life to do all that.
Yeah. And yeah, all of you who are who want to be comics or comedy writers, we need people to point things out, the absurdities in the world. Go write, go do it. It'll probably help, even if it's a little bit, it'll help change things.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. I'm good with this.
Me too.
We're not plugging anything because we don't have anything because we're all low lives. But for next one, we might have something to plug.
Yes. Yes. I guess Fever is still performing every Saturday Pacific time at 9 p.m. on the Pack Theaters Twitch. So you can see me there.
I was recently on La Lista podcast, a podcast for Latinx writers. It'll probably be out in October.
Nice.
So, you know, watch out for that.
Oh, and Supervised Comedy is going to have another sketch coming soon. This one's going to be good. This is like a whole TV show practically.
Is it Cars for Kids?
It's the Cars for Kids E! True Hollywood parody. So
this one's sick. You guys got to watch this one. It's hilarious.
This one's good. This one's going to be it's going to be a long edit, but this is the first time that I'm okay with the video being over 5 minutes that we make. So
hell yeah. Well, Allie, I think we killed that frog.
We killed that frog.
Peace.
Bye.